Maine's political pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, family-owned and operated since 1936, with locations from Bangor to Saco. Learn more at leeauto.com.
Well, welcome back to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz. You know, the schism within the Republican Party continues to draw a lot of attention as many maintain their allegiance to former President Donald Trump, while others are looking for a way to move forward without him. Joining me is Maine Public's chief political correspondent, Steve Missler, senior political correspondent, Mal Leary. And we're going to begin this edition of The Pulse by talking about how this conflict may shape the future of the grand old party here in Maine. So, Steve, let's start with you. What's the most dramatic example of this conflict that you've seen here in the last month?
There's been quite a few, Erwin, but I think the one that stands out to me is this censoring of two former Republican state senators, Roger Cates and Kevin Ray, by the Waldo County Republican Committee. Both Ray and Cates are lifelong Republicans. I mean, Ray told me he attended his first GOP convention in 1978 and didn't miss one until 2016. And Cates remembers attending a parade for Dwight Eisenhower back in the 50s. So, you know, these are people whose identities are very wedded to their party affiliation. But the Waldo County GOP is seeking to bar both of them from seeking office, basically because both announced in September that they would vote for President Biden. You know, both have voiced strong objections to the former president's conduct. And this resolution by the Waldo County GOP says by going public with their support for Biden, Cates and Ray basically gave permission to other Republicans to do the same thing during the election.
So what's been the response from kind of the other branch, if you will, at the moment of the Republican Party, the more moderate voices?
Well, both Cates and Ray, I mean, and as well as others, I think, who would fit that category, I find it pretty mystifying. I mean, after all, the modern GOP has made a big deal out of the dangers of cancel culture, which is loosely defined as like a societal backlash or expulsion based on, you know, voicing unpopular ideas. In this case, Ray and Cates were canceled by members of their own party for what turned out to be a pretty popular idea with 81 million Americans who voted for Biden, but obviously not so popular with the president's hardcore supporters who continue to demand fealty to the former president. I should point out that this is not unique to Maine. I mean, state party committees all over the country are passing similar resolutions. This is a national issue, and it just shows, again, that the former president has a firm grip on not only the National Republican Party, but also state committees as well.
Mal, you've covered both of these guys for ages. I mean, this is pretty incredible stuff, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, Kevin Ray not only served as president of the state Senate, but he was chief of staff for Olympia Snow for, God, 20-something years. That's where I really got to know him quite well. And Roger Cates has been my state senator here in Augusta, and he has a long history in the Republican Party. His father, Bennett Cates, was the founder of the University of Maine system, as we know it today, when he was majority leader in the state Senate. To Steve's point, though, I want to go back a little bit more in history, because there has been some really tumultuous times in the Republican Party in this state prior to this round that we're having with Trump and LePage. For example, McCarthy, senator from Wisconsin, went after Margaret Chase Smith because of her conscience speech, found somebody to run against her in the primary in 1954. Doesn't that sound kind of familiar to what we're hearing now? So as I look over this, this is like, here we go again. This is the cycle that we're in now. And I think at some point the moderates are going to start retaking the party, because they're going to find out that if you nominate everybody from the far right, they're going to lose in the fall. The same way, if the Democrats nominated everybody from the far left in general elections, they'd be the losers.
You know, one of the places this is also kind of shaking out, Mal, is in this whole brouhaha over the Capitol Police Chief Russ Govan and his social media posts, right? I mean, A, he's getting both criticism and support for these.
Yeah, the technology has changed over the years. It used to be very partisan newspapers. Their papers were Republican, they were Democrat, they were know-nothing. And they were the sources of information. in this social media age, anybody can go on with a website. Anybody can go on there and start posting information. And what Russ Gavin is, finding out is whatever you post on there is going to be around forever. Mm-hmm. And he tried to take down his comments, and they had been captured in a screenshot. When you look at the underlying comments, they used to be saying them over a beer at the bar, and now they're posting them on the web.
Steve, is there any, do you see any way for the Republican Party in Maine to get past this at the moment?
Well, it's hard to see the path. I mean, it's, I've been thinking about that a lot, Erwin. And I think, you know, I keep going, I go back, I can't go back quite as far as Mal and with some of this history, but certainly if you think about the whole Tea Party ascendancy in 2010, it feels a little bit like that, except, you know, it's the Tea Party didn't have a charismatic leader that became president and lost after a first term. And then, but in the interim also what managed to command so much fealty from the entire Republican Party apparatus. That's the big difference here. And, you know, NPR actually had interviewed a longtime political consultant with the Republican Party. He kind of made the point or the argument that what we're seeing now is essentially a battle between the governing wing or faction of the Republican Party and the populist wing, which is a lot like what we saw in 2010 with the Tea Party. Again, the chief difference being you have a charismatic leader who has become president. Now he's done because he was forced out via an election. But at the same time, he's maintaining a grip on the party. That's the fundamental difference between, I think, what we saw in 2010 and maybe arguably before that when Margaret Trace Smith was dealing with the McCarthy madness, because McCarthy never became president. What you're seeing is a flaming or a sort of flogging of the imagined or fantastical reality by the former president and people believing him. And so that's the struggle, I think, for the establishment or governing Republicans, is how do you defeat that? And how do you defeat that knowing that you're going to receive the same kind of blowback that Democrats are when they're trying to defeat it? You know, these Republicans don't want to necessarily be aligned with Democrats. They just want their party back.
I'd cast it a little differently. I would say what you've got is pragmatic Republicans who have a philosophical bent. They're very conservative, but they're willing to work across the aisle to pass something, to actually govern, to use Steve's phrase of a minute ago. And on the other side, you have the politics of personality, where, you know, people are pledging their fealty not to the party, but to Trump. And we'll have to see how far that goes. We saw here in Maine that Governor LePage tried to influence a lot of local races by endorsements, and he wasn't very successful. We have yet to see the impact of Trump on some of these congressional races, where he's threatening to have people run against the folks that actually had the temerity to vote against him.
Now, I think in Maine, Mal, doesn't that just run up against Mainers' independent streak? As I recall, Angus King didn't have much luck in endorsements either.
Exactly.
On issues and things.
We're very much independent, and that's the reason you have, you know, the weird situation where in Lewiston, Joe Biden wins, Susan Collins wins, and Jared Golden wins. And there's a lot of space between those three.
Well, let's turn to the governor. And I think she may have made a bit of a misstep. She proposed a supplemental budget that initially was going to tax the forgivable coronavirus relief loans that are awarded through the Paycheck Protection Program. And Steve Mistler took her like a day, 2 days to kind of change her mind about that.
Yeah, I mean, she took a lot of pushback from the business organizations like the Maine State Chamber of Commerce, the NFIB, National Federation of Independent Businesses. They were pretty tough on her right out of the gate for basically not conforming to the federal code on these PPP loans or the Paycheck Protection Program loans, which basically acted as replacement income for businesses to make sure that they could keep employees on, you know, on the payroll. The problem is that, you know, that income, if not for the pandemic, would come in and it would be taxed. and the state would see revenue from that. Well, the problem in this case, if you wanted to conform, you were basically asking states to pay for that loss of income through loss of revenue. And that's what I think Mills was balking at. But at the end of the day, I think the blowback was so strong that she decided to come out with a release saying that she was going to try to find a way to fund it, maybe through another federal funding that may be coming through with this latest COVID relief package. It was, you know, it's an interesting policy debate too, but I also, it was interesting because I think, you know, Mills, Governor Mills has been very friendly, I think, to business groups, has tried to seek their support. If you go back to a lot of her releases during the pandemic, when she was closing certain sectors or reopening them, it was always a statement from the chamber or some business group in there. I think that's very important to her to maintain that alliance, such as it is. And, you know, what you saw was them pushing back in a hard way and then her sort of recalibrating and, you know, saying she was going to try to find a solution.
When I spoke with her about it, I mean, she made it very clear that from the get-go, she wanted to fully conform, but given the budget projections and the actions of Congress up to the point when she had to submit the supplemental budget, they couldn't find the money. She's now, as Steve said, she's really betting on Joe Biden putting some money for the states into his relief package that gets passed, and they'll have some money that they can use to pay for this. Because the reality is, you're not going to get a Democratic legislature to cut programs, let's say, for the poor in order to provide a double tax break to help businesses. And that's what we're talking about here, because not only do they get the income tax relief from the tax on the income from those loans, they get to at the same time deduct the expenses that were paid for by the loan. I mean, you know, classic double dipping there. But Congress consciously did that as a way to help small businesses. And what the governor told me was she agreed with that, but we simply don't have the money because, as she pointed out to me rather strongly, you know, the state can't print money, Congress can.
Well, and of course, Steve, the other thing the governor had to be looking at is the fact that 2022 is approaching and that's going to be a gubernatorial election year.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, at a minimum, you know, that the whole kerfuffle shows that this gubernatorial race is, you know, pretty much underway. We don't know who, you know, we haven't even determined whether or not Janet Mills wants to run for re-election. I suspect that she does. We don't even know who her opponents are, but I suspect we know a couple or at least one. That would be former Governor Paula Page if he decides to do this. But, you know, nearly 2 years away from, you know, a 2022 election for governor. And we had releases from the Republican Governors Association blasting her. We had LePage blasting her and his affiliated political organization blasting her, the main Republican Party blasting her. It was a sign of things to come, even if this particular issue may end up proving moot because it gets solved. The whole idea of starting a campaign super early against Mills is basically to weaken her. And the last I checked, I think her approval rating was in the 50s or maybe mid to low 60s.
Does this foreshadow any further issues she's going to have, Mal, as she deals with the budget for the next 2 years?
Oh, absolutely. We'll see other flare-ups as we go along. We have, you know, what we're talking about here is in the supplemental budget to get through this fiscal year. They haven't even started the discussion for the two-year budget that would start July 1st. And you can bet there's going to be a lot of debate and sharp disagreements there before they finally come up with a package.
All right. Steve, Mal, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
And that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. A reminder, we update the Pulse podcast each Friday. You can, of course, get the next edition of the Pulse from mainepublic.org or wherever you download your podcasts. Steve Missler prepares the Maine's Political Pulse newsletter. That's also at mainepublic.org, updated on Friday mornings. And you can have that emailed to you if you like. We air most of the Pulse on Weekend Edition Sunday on Maine Public Radio, with excerpts on Morning Edition on Mondays as well. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz, and we'll be back.